isn't only about nostalgia for years gone by, and that's not a bad thing about Christmas, but it is also a sign of the big story that our personal stories are getting woven into. At Christmas and during the season of Advent, while we're waiting for the celebration, we hear those nice words thrown around: hope, peace, joy, and love. But I wonder if we have forgotten, or maybe never realized, how revolutionary those words really are. What is hope, anyway? What does peace really look like? What does joy feel like? And do we really, have we ever known love? I wonder what you're most longing for. You know those like ads with the little tabs at the bottom where if you're interested, you can pull the thing off that has the phone number or the email address? If we had a poster that had options to pull off tabs of hope, peace, joy, or love, which one would you take home and stick in your pocket to go with you? Maybe you are waiting for hope. Maybe you're hoping for an end of the pandemic, for instance. Or maybe you're thinking about this chapter of your life, whatever that is. I love people talk about sometimes the thirds of life, the first third, the middle third, and the last third. So whichever third you might be in, maybe you're hoping that that third of your life could be really meaningful. Maybe you're just hoping to get through the day, or the week, or December. Henry Nouwen reminds us that optimism and hope are radically different attitudes. Optimism is the expectation that things, the weather, human relationships, the economy, the political situation, and so on, will get better. Things will improve. Nouwen says, hope is the trust that God will fulfill God's promises to us in a way that leads us to true freedom. The optimist speaks about concrete changes in the future. The person of hope lives in the moment with the knowledge and trust that all of life is in good hands. Expectations versus trust. Hope versus optimism. I think it's really easy for hope to downgrade itself into a kind of quiet optimism, for our trust to fade into expectations. And as one author has reminded us, expectations are often just resentments waiting to happen. So we downgrade our expectations to only expect things that we can actually manage to make happen, or we're just always putting our expectation a little further in the future. We hope things will turn out. We look at something and we try to think about how to make it better, to optimize it, to make little improvements until maybe it will somehow actually be better. But hope is actually more revolutionary than that. Even when things are not improving, Christian hope is rooted in God. Christian hope is rooted in knowing that we are held by the love of God even when the situation around us is unraveling. And we tell the story of hope as Christians all throughout the year, how Jesus is born into the world at Christmas, but then we also tell just a few months later about the death of this same Jesus. And by all accounts, on Good Friday, death wins. Hope is lost and kind of ridiculous, because everybody knows death is the end, right? Optimism won't do you much good on Good Friday. Resurrection cannot be contained by optimism. But resurrection is exactly what gives us hope, even when it looks like all is lost. Our hope is rooted in a God who can bring something out of nothing, life out of death. Or maybe you're waiting for peace. Maybe you would pull the little paper tag and put some peace in your pocket. Possibly for an absence of conflict. Not that anyone's family gatherings at Christmas ever feature conflict, See, there we go. Now we know where the conflict is. But also in our world today, conflict is aplenty, right? Of all kinds. It's a natural thing for us to just settle for getting along, for tolerating one another, rather than to yearn for true peace. Because yearning for true peace is really painful then when conflict arises. But what about if we think about a bigger meaning of the word peace? Shalom is the Hebrew word for peace. And when shalom is described in the Bible, things fit together the way that they are intended. And that goes from the way people relate to one another, to the way people relate to God, and the way people relate to the earth. Those are all relationships, and especially the people to people and the people to the earth that are all around us. We see headlines everywhere about how those relationships are not going terribly well. Shalom, though, is this much bigger thing than just getting along, tolerating, managing not to have any conflict. It's much more revolutionary to have our relationships righted, right? To relate to the people, both the individuals in our lives, but also as groups and as nations. And then people relating to the rest of creation rightly, taking care of the earth and stewarding creation the way that we were asked to from the very beginning of the story. And then, of course, relating as we were meant to with the divine. Shalom, then, is a much bigger thing, a much more revolutionary thing than just a moment without conflict. Peace. Shalom. Maybe this year you would take a little bit of joy to put in your pocket. Maybe you are watching for those little sparks, either in the faces of others or maybe in your own soul this Christmas. I think the natural decay of our sense of joy is both to limit it to feelings of happiness and to divorce it from community. And those are two really important pieces. Joy is a response of happiness. Yes, happiness is involved, but it is happiness that gets expressed in community. And joy can be sparked not only because something good has happened to us, but because something good has happened to someone we're in connection with. The Anchor Bible Dictionary, which is not always my first go-to, but it had this great description of joy. The experience of deliverance and the anticipation of salvation provide the most significant occasions for rejoicing among the people of God in the Old Testament. The coming of the Messiah, who delivers his people and brings salvation, becomes the basis for rejoicing in the New Testament. The response of joy, gladness, or happiness is not only a deep inward feeling, but is expressed in celebration when we gather together. And of course, this is why being alone while everyone feasts together is so painful, right? Because our joy is made complete when we get together with people that we know and love. Joy expresses itself in song and dance, maybe more dance some places, less dance others, feasting and celebration. Anybody feasted already today? Yeah, anybody gonna feast in the next, as quickly as I can get you there? And then most of us probably have a feast of some sort planned for tomorrow. Now, this might look different than it has looked in the past for us, but it doesn't mean that we can't express our song and dance, our feasting, and our celebration. In the Old Testament, much of the talk of joy was about the people being delivered from their enemies, physical salvation. Anybody had a negative COVID test and had a welling up of joy? Yeah, right? There's new opportunities. But the New Testament sees a new expression of joy, and it shows up right in the middle of the Christmas story. You know the line, "What did the angel say to the shepherds? Do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all the people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you, and he is the Messiah, the Lord. Joy here looked like the shepherds running into Bethlehem, looking for the new king. A celebration that featured a tired carpenter named Joseph, Mary, who must have been exhausted and overwhelmed, because what other kind of new mother is there than exhausted and overwhelmed? Joy. Celebration, expressing our happiness and gladness in community. Or maybe you're waiting for love, scanning the horizon, waiting for the phone to ring, counting down the days until you can see the ones you love. Or for many of us, at Christmas especially, we're remembering the ones we can no longer see, but who we love all the same. Love. We've likely each tasted of love in some form, sometimes in some of its best forms, and we've likely each tasted the disappointment, the heartbreak even, that love sometimes brings. But what does the love we see at Christmas look like? Esau Macaulay, an American scholar, puts it beautifully. I love this quote. "It's an exceedingly strange and seemingly ridiculous plan." This is him describing Christmas. I want to just actually put that on my Christmas plans for next year so that I just remember. It's exceedingly strange and seemingly ridiculous. I've been there. "In a world drunk with a desire for power and filled with those who take what they want by force, the miracle of Christmas is one of weakness, not strength. It's a suggestion that divine love is way more powerful than we think. It turns out that the faithful and never-stopping love of God runs right through the entire story, not just through the Christmas story, but the big story of the Christian faith, the story that runs from creation to covenant to the Jesus story and all the way to the new creation. God's love is present all through that story and all through our stories. And then God calls us to love God and to love our neighbor. And Jesus demonstrates for us what that looks like. A love that acts, a love that gives, a love that sees what others miss. A love that sets rights and privileges aside. A love that gives oneself away. A love that lays down one's life. A love that death can't defeat. A love that never gives up. A love that keeps going until everything is made new. So I wonder, what are you waiting for this Christmas? What is it that you would take with you if you could put a little bit of one of those in your pocket? During this season, we do think about waiting and watching. We watch to anticipate and celebrate the birth of Jesus, but we also look for Jesus' second advent, his second arrival, where he's promised to wipe every tear from our eyes, to make everything new. And we use these really nice words during Advent and around Christmas: hope, peace, joy, love. And here at Southwest, we lit a candle on each of the four Sundays to remember those. But these words, they are more than just nice words. They are words that help us remember how revolutionary Christmas really is. When Jesus came, when Jesus was born into this world, his arrival flipped something, ignited something, hinted at the reality that God doesn't just ask us to wait. God doesn't expect us to just muster up a little more hope. Come on, guys, be hopeful, be more peaceful. Right? This is not the wonder of Christmas. God doesn't want us to find a decent amount of peace, a glimmer of joy, and to squeeze out an ounce more of love. When Jesus was born, we finally got to see what God is really like. Hope personified, peace, wholeness enfleshed, joy made full, and love that never ends. Well, this Christmas, as you go, I trust that you will encounter and be able to notice when you see them glimmers of hope, peace, joy, and love. And that when you do, you will discover that they are revolutionary because they point you towards the one who would personify hope, who would enflesh the wholeness, the right relatedness of this shalom kind of peace, and who embodies joy made full and lives a life that demonstrates love that never, ever ends. Merry Christmas. Go in peace.